Hi, and welcome to the Learn to Code with Me podcast. Today, we'll be discussing how to know which tech path you should take and which skills to learn to go along with it. But first, a quick word from our sponsors. Zojo is a development tool you can use to build apps for desktop, mobile, and more. With Zojo, app building is easier and faster than ever, even for beginners. Learn to Code with Me listeners get 20% off with the coupon code ICANCODE. Try Zojo free at zojo.com/learn-to-code. Fullstack Academy is a leading coding bootcamp that helps great people become great developers at top companies like Google and Facebook. Learn to Code with Me listeners get access to their comprehensive JavaScript course for free. Visit fullstackacademy.com/learn to get started. In today's episode, I talk with David Clinton. David is a high school teacher turned IT professional who specializes in system administration. He also creates training material for many cutting-edge technical subjects, including Linux systems, cloud computing, and container technologies like Docker. The reason why I reached out to David to have him on as a guest is because he's actually written a book all about deciding which technologies to learn. The book is called Solving for Technology: How to Quickly Learn Valuable Skills in a Madly Changing Technology World. And that's precisely what our conversation is going to focus on today: how to figure out which path you should take, which tech stack you should learn, and the best way to learn it. Enjoy. In today's episode, I talk with David Clinton. David is a high school teacher turned IT professional who specializes in system administration, and he also creates training materials for many cutting-edge technical subjects, including Linux systems, cloud computing, and container technologies like Docker. The reason why I reached out to David to have him on as a guest is because he's actually written a book all about deciding which technologies to learn. The book is called Solving for Technology: How to Quickly Learn Valuable New Skills in a Madly Changing Technology World. And that's precisely what our conversation is going to focus on today: how to figure out what path you should take, which tech stack you should learn, and the best way to learn it. So thank you so much, David, for coming on the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Lawrence. It's great to be here. It's actually my first podcast experience. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, that's great. But I know you have a lot of experience doing Pluralsight courses and other things, so it's not your first time explaining
things. Not a stranger to a microphone, but podcasts are almost live, and that's like live, kind of. So let's dive in.
Yeah, let's do it. So I am really excited to talk with you about all of the things that I mentioned in the intro, because when I first started out learning back in, 2013, I was so inundated with all of these resources, opinions, information. And today, 2018 and beyond, in 2019, there's even more information out there. And there's so many different paths one can take, right? So how should a person go about figuring out which one they should follow?
Well, it's a big question. Probably the best first step is to sort of organize for yourself into categories the broad breakdown of technology. So there's coding, which can be Python and Java, but I also include HTML and CSS or Bash scripting or even PowerShell perhaps on Windows. So that broad spectrum of coding, that's one part, only a subset of technology. There's system administration, which can include cloud computing like AWS or a whole world of network administration under the banner of Cisco. It's a funny thing about Cisco is that when you dive into it, which I never have really, but I know the people involved in Cisco think that is the whole administration world. They really don't see anything beyond. Maybe I'm being harsh, but nonetheless, it is a large world that seems kind of separate from the rest, but it's a large part of the technology administration picture. Then beyond administration, there's data science and machine learning and artificial intelligence, which has a skill set that is it overlaps with other skill sets, but is something, it's a focus all its own. And finally, there's the DevOps world, which is related to the continuous integration, continuous deployment, the techniques for bringing applications and software to actual deployment in the real world, which again overlaps with other domains, but is its own world. So being familiar with the broad categories of technology will, I guess, help you through your first step to figure where you want to go. Where do you want to explore next?
So there's all these broad categories, and getting ones familiar, like what would you define as familiar? Because I can picture a person listening to this and thinking, oh my gosh, do I have to take a course on DevOps, on AI, on HTML and CSS, on data science? Or do you mean more like read a book or two about each topic at a high level?
I don't even know if I'd go that far. A lot of people have a natural leaning towards one or the other of these technologies that just make they have a little bit of experience, or they have a relative who's involved. So leverage that, take advantage of any entree you already have, but also go even higher level than a book. Read take the Wikipedia page for system administration or cloud computing or just spend a half an hour reading very high level information or descriptions of a particular domain and see if it attracts you. See how expensive it might be to explore. Although really everything now, with the possible exception of Cisco, everything is really really effectively free to explore and to go quite deep. So. If you're really stuck, though, if you really have no clue which of these domains you want to explore, so good, spend a half a day reading online about each one and see if anything clicks.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice and something I wish I did when I first started learning, because when I first started learning, I thought the only tech job out there was like web developer, software engineer, and there was this like rigid path to follow, and I had to do these things, and that was the only outcome that I could have. And obviously, I realized later that was not the case. So I would love to hear actually about you and your journey a bit. I know you were teaching in high school, and now you are still teaching in just a very different way and probably very different topics. How did you decide what to learn? Like, how did you make your own kind of career transition and figure that out?
Well, it was quite organic. It happened. There were goals that I happened to have in the school. It was a small school, and it was back in the 90s, I guess, a long, long, long time ago. And a lot of schools, especially smaller schools, didn't have IT budgets, let alone IT professionals working there. So there were certain things we needed. We needed to network some computers together. We needed to find a cost-effective way to deploy computers to students and into the office. And I was the guy, I guess, who was the least unlikely to undertake the task. So I started digging into networking and a little bit of system administration. At the time, I didn't know it was called system administration. I had goals, and I had to somehow find a way to fulfill those goals, to reach those goals. And that was my first solid introduction. Well, okay, back in high school, way, way back in the late 70s, I did a course in computer science and Fortran, but that didn't really play that large a role here. That was my first exposure. I had a very specific goal I had to accomplish. I had to fulfill the goal, otherwise I'd look like an idiot or even more than an idiot than usual. And I did it. The next transition, I guess, was a few years later. I had some students who graduated and gone on and moved all around North America, and they wanted to connect once a week somehow online in a classroom setting. So I started to look around for software, video conferencing software that would be free and would allow us to have a whiteboard and video and audio and texting back and forth, to have a classroom, just a once-a-week friendly classroom environment. I found something called Big Blue Button, which is a open source software for video conferencing in an educational environment. And I then discovered Amazon Web Services as a platform. That was a huge learning curve to figure out how to provision an instance and actually make it available through publicly and securely. In retrospect, it probably wasn't that secure, but it was certainly public, and it worked. And that first dive into Amazon Web Services eventually translated into a big chunk of what my career is today. It was a practical goal. It was something that I really wanted to accomplish, and I just forced my way through until I did it.
So in that case, you were still teaching, and this was to set up like a virtual classroom for some of your previous students or existing students.
Right.
Okay, so you had this like really specific goal. It was work related because it was related to your full-time job at the time, and that kind of motivated you to solve this problem and get through that. I'm curious, how many years ago was that at this point?
I guess about a dozen years ago, maybe a little more. When you're my age, these things all blend together, you know.
So a lot has happened though between then, like between setting that up and then where you are today. When did you realize that like teaching in the classroom wasn't for you any longer, like in the actual physical classroom? Like when did that switch occur?
It was a combination. I always had a fear of sticking around and teaching too long. It is to some degree a young person's game. You have to have, or I joke that a teacher when he starts teaching is full of enthusiasm and idealism, but hasn't got a clue what they're doing. And at the end, they're old and weak and tired and cynical. And for a period of time in the middle, they've got enough experience and enough enthusiasm. Still, they're good. But that only lasts about 15 seconds, that middle period. I exaggerate, obviously. But I didn't want to overstay my welcome as a teacher. And there was just the school itself actually was more or less closing down. So I figured that was a good time to transition. Simply, I was still good, but I didn't want to stay too long. But there was a lot of promise in these what had until that point been hobbies. There was a lot of promise in converting those to actual career skills. I did a little certification exam in Linux administration with the Linux Professional Institute. I later did some work with them. I wrote a book for them. Related to them at any rate. And it was a successful transition. It's scary. It's especially giving up a regular paycheck is very scary, but it often works out.
Yep. I can definitely relate to that. as some of the listeners know, because I've talked about it, I recently left my full-time job. So that was, you know, having a paycheck, the matching 401k, all the other benefits, healthcare and all that. So it's definitely a terrifying thing. So, and very real for me right now. So I could totally relate. And I'm happy to hear that it obviously worked out for you.
Yes, it certainly did. Oddly enough, I'm still able to pay all my bills. Nothing more, but I'm paying my bills and I'm happy with that.
Yeah. So kind of going back to this idea of figuring out what skills to learn. And you wrote a book about this. So I definitely want to dive into that a lot. And how can a person, once they know what they want to do, so they take a day or two or maybe a couple of weeks exploring these different broader technologies, and then they get to the point where it's like, you know what, I think software engineering is for me, or I think data science is for me, or I think one of the other things you mentioned earlier, AI or system administration is for me. How do they then figure out what to learn?
Okay, well, I would... there are some tools, some really, really useful tools available. One that always comes to my mind is the United States government's Occupational Outlook Handbook in the Bureau of Labor Statistics website. So the actual URL is bls.gov/OOH. It's an easy URL. And that does a great job of statistically analyzing what occupations are healthy now and will be healthy for the next 5, maybe 10 years. I would definitely, if you have a number of options available sitting in front of you, I could choose this or this. I would definitely run them through the Occupational Outlook Handbook to see if they have good promise over the long term, the midterm future at any rate. And also, you can get some great ideas out of that handbook. I would definitely recommend a tool like that. Or in your area, I'm in Canada, so the Canadian government has similar resources, any resources you use like that are going to help. Now, within, let's say, you decide you wanted to go into coding and you want to choose a language, spend a week, let's say, going through getting started projects and tutorials on each language that you're thinking about. A week is probably the smallest amount of time that you'll actually get far enough that you'll get a taste, a flavor of how it's going to work for you. And spend a week, let's say, on 2, 3, 4 options and see how you like each one. But also try to understand what the strengths of each programming language or environment, let's say you want to learn Linux administration or Windows administration, learn, understand the strengths and weaknesses of each platform, of each environment, and how they may lend themselves well or not well to the particular career or job you're looking for. It's try to make a match so that it makes sense. You don't, you know, Fortran is a great language, but I wouldn't recommend a lot of people learn it right now. You may enjoy it, but it's not going to lead you to a lot of employment.
I absolutely love that advice, and that's something that I wish I did sooner. It took me months to, and I didn't go about the exact process you outlined, but I did something similar where I looked at companies that I would like to work for at the time several years ago, and what jobs they were hiring for that I thought sounded appealing, and what technologies they were looking for that role filled. I really like your approach, though, of using like the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers. I've been to that site before. We'll definitely include a link in the show notes to it, and seeing like what's kind of trending and what has good promise for the future, as you mentioned. So, okay, that's really great advice. So you sort of said this with the Fortran example, but is there ever a time when a person shouldn't learn a new skill or technology? Like, would it just be, there's no demand for it? Or could there be another instance where it's like, oh, that just doesn't make sense to learn?
Yeah, sure. I mean, on the one hand, it's almost always potentially valuable to learn a new skill and technology. And of course, remembering that these days you're not going to sit in one career doing one job for your whole life, your whole professional life. You're going to be moving around, and even within one job, you're going to have to change technologies every 6 months or a year, add new technology. So learning new things is always a great idea, but you're right, you have to balance it. You can't, let's say, jeopardize your own job or family by learning too many new careers all at once. You have to balance with the rest of everything else going on in your life. And also, and this is something I've seen in young people trying to learn new things and aiming for jobs, don't jump out of one study to start something new until you've mastered the first one. Get your certification if it's a kind of thing that leads to a certification, or be able to produce an application, a decent mobile app, let's say, if you're learning Java as an example. Get 1, 2, 3 good apps in your portfolio and your Git repo, and have something under your belt, and then move on to something else. But don't jump from technology to technology to technology, because you'll end up at the end, you'll have nothing.
Sit tight, podcast listeners. We're taking a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. If you want to build apps that look great on every type of device, Zojo makes it easy, even if you're a beginner. The cross-platform app development tool lets you code your app in just one language, then simply click a checkbox to generate versions for other platforms. Code an app for Mac OS and have a Windows version in one click. You can also use their drag-and-drop tool to seamlessly create a user interface. Since Zojo uses native controls, the app will automatically look and perform as it should on every platform. Zojo is perfect for anyone who wants to build an app, even if you aren't an expert. Build an app to make your job easier or as a hobby. Zojo is also used by professional developers who want to build apps faster, and even Fortune 500 companies. Want to give it a try? Learn to Code With Me listeners get 20% off with the coupon code ICANCODE. Try Zojo free at zojo.com/learn-to-code. That's Zojo, zojo.com/learn-to-code. Fullstack Academy is a leading coding bootcamp that helps programming enthusiasts from all walks of life become professional software developers at top-tier companies. Take Noel, for example. Noel encountered VBA while working in finance, and suddenly, programming was her jam. After learning all she could on her own, she applied to Fullstack Academy, and now she's a software engineer at a travel technology company, Porter & Sale. P.S. She's never been happier. To follow in Noelle's footsteps, try Fullstack Academy's comprehensive JavaScript course for free. You'll come out on the other side knowing the fundamentals of JavaScript, and maybe even ready to pursue programming for real. Visit fullstackacademy.com/learn to jumpstart your software development career today. Full Stack Academy, making great people into great developers. Yes, I also love that advice. And one thing I get a question from readers fairly often is, oh, I'm taking this course. And it's like six different things. And I always think, you know, if think about just like learning a spoken language, would you try to learn Mandarin, Spanish, French, Portuguese all at the same time? No, like that would be insane. You would learn one thing and then move on to the next. And usually when you move on to the next thing, it's faster for you to learn because you're, you know, you're, I'm sure there's some scientific or psychological thing, but once you learn one thing, I think it's just easier to learn the next thing, especially if they're somewhat similar, like a spoken language.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing, you have to get somewhere. You have to have a goal, reach the goal, and then move on. And by all means, branch out, but get something before you branch.
But what about if a person is learning something right now that they really don't like, and maybe they realize too, there isn't much of a demand for it? I just keep going back to your example before of Fortran, but say it was a situation like that. Should they stop or should they finish out that thing that they're doing, whether it's an online course certification or what have you?
Well, the economists call it, I think, sunk costs, that there's a certain point that you've sunk so much into a particular investment that you don't like the idea of backing out, and you may just keep going regardless, pushing through, even though you already really know deep down that it's not going anywhere. It's a hard thing to tell you when that you've reached that point, but there is a point where the law of diminishing returns tells you that, you know, the more effort you put in is not going to pay off in the end. Cut your losses, break out, and try something else. There is that point. It's hard to know, and perhaps it's good advice to ask somebody else who can give you an objective answer. Ask a family member or a mentor. If or online, go to Reddit. They'll always tell you what you're doing wrong. They're always happy to tell you what you're doing wrong on Reddit. but go somewhere, you know, go to Stack Overflow even, you know, just to ask them if they think it's worth pursuing this further or moving on to something else. And if you get two or three objective opinions saying it's time to bail out, probably it's time to bail out.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I just think of sunken costs beyond learning something new and projects that you may start or other things that you realize, wait, this maybe wasn't as good of an idea as I thought it was. And I should probably cut my losses and bail now. And that's always a tough thing to do. But that's what I just love with technology in the world we live in today is people have so many different careers and people could kind of reinvent themselves and technology is always changing. So you don't have to worry about learning one thing and using it for the rest of your life. There's always, it's just, things are always evolving.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so easy to try new things safely without a great investment of time, effort, and money. I mean, in my book, Solving for Technology, and also in other books I've written also on Linux, my Linux in Action book at Manning, whatever, I have, I think, a whole chapter on this, about creating a virtualized sandbox environment that is on your PC, whatever it is, a laptop if it's sufficiently powered, or desktop or whatever, you can, or an Amazon Web Services instance, you can create a virtual environment where you can experiment with administrating a particular version of an operating system or coding or running an application. Experiment with in an environment that takes seconds to load. And if you kill it, if you make a terrible mistake and you brick the whole thing, so kill it and start a new one in a few more seconds. It's so easy to learn anything new simply because it's you can create these virtual environments using VirtualBox, which a lot of people have on all operating systems. They can load any virtual operating system inside VirtualBox or using a technology like Docker. That also just lowers the cost of entry enormously for any new technology.
Yeah, all awesome advice. And kind of on a similar note, we talked briefly before our interview today about just choosing the right training resource because there's so many different ways a person can learn a thing. And this, of course, is once they're committed to learning whatever that is. So they take their week playing around with the different programming languages, they realize one is something they want to pursue, they do their research, they have their goal. What next? How do they figure out the best way to really learn that thing?
Okay, well, let's break it down, I guess, into the various categories of learning resources. The old question, the old debate, whether you really have to have a college degree in that particular major, or whether you can go to a boot camp or just learn online on your own, it's a debate which has no clear answer. I actually recently saw a nice discussion of that on I'll send you the URL later, on a site called triplebyte.com. They had a blog post on boot camps versus college, where they found the people that were coming to them and taking there's a test that they administrate there, taking the test, they found that the college grads, the computer science grads, they were good at algorithms and data structures. The boot camp grads who'd never been to college, or at least not for computer science, they were better at web system design and some of the front end stuff. And both seem to be about equally proficient at practical programming challenges. So it depends what you want. Sometimes college simply isn't necessary. Sometimes it's a waste of $250,000 and 5 years of your life. You know, the 4 years is always stretches out to 5 years. And my theory is it's because universities make more money for every semester that you're there. So they stretch it out for you. But either way, you can definitely learn on your own a lot of skills that are marketable. That will get you jobs with everything else falling into place, of course, without a college degree. Now, let's move away from college. So what resources of training, what training resources are there? So there are courses, for instance, the video courses available online, free and paid. There are curated and non-curated courses, course platforms. So a curated platform will be like Pluralsight, where I have a lot of courses. They have over 6,000 courses in total, almost all in technology topics, or what they used to call Lynda. They now, I think, call LinkedIn Learning, unless I'm mistaken, because LinkedIn bought Lynda a couple of years ago. So they have thousands of courses. And of course, there are many other sites. There's Udacity out in California, which is one of my sons has taken one of their courses, and it was a very successful experience. So those are curated platforms for video courses where you can be confident you're getting high quality content, high quality teaching, because it's been through a vetting process, a review process. Non-curated platforms include training videos on YouTube or Udemy, where some of it's trashy and worth every penny you don't pay for it, but some of it can be quite good. If you find the right channel and the right provider, then stick with it. Documentation comes in different flavors. There's a lot of the companies that provide the platforms themselves, like AWS or Microsoft, have their own documentation stores, which can be very good. Sometimes a little bit long, but they definitely are well maintained and have a good workflow process in them. And then there are books. The books are generally, like my books at Manning, you know, Linux in Action is one of my books. The books are heavily edited. They are very, very carefully planned. An enormous amount of work and money goes into producing the book before it ever gets out. So you're getting a different quality of teaching, but for some people, they don't need it. Oddly enough, despite the fact I write books and create videos, I myself almost never learn from books or videos. I'll usually go to a product documentation site, read the quick start page and quickly replicate it in my own system, and then start just doing it from there. Or if I need a specific piece of information, I'll use DuckDuckGo to find the right page in the documentation, scan the page for just the information I want, and get back to work. But that's me. I happen to know that there are thousands of people who buy books and watch videos, and I'm a part of that ecosystem. Test yourself, I guess. See if you work best with documentation online, where you can scan and find and run, or you like the steady process of a book, which takes you from A to Z in a sequential way, or if you like videos. And don't forget, of course, the online forums like Stack Overflow. Just be careful always before you ask a question. Make sure you've done your homework and make sure you're emotionally prepared to be melted in a flurry of attacks. But they're worth it. It's worth it. It's worth a little public shaming to get the information you need.
I loved what you said a bit ago about worth every penny you don't pay for. Yeah. With like the free resources. Yeah. I think it's interesting. I talk to people sometimes who have complaints about certain things that are free. I'm like, well, it's free. What do you expect, right? Like, right. If you're getting something for free, you can't expect the highest quality. Now, if you're paying hundreds or thousands of dollars for some of the different programs out there, that's a whole other story. But yeah, I really like that. And yeah, exactly, with the online forums, always be careful. I feel like whenever I have questions or really seem specific, I guess I'm not learning a new skill or technology, I always just go to the forums. That's always where I end up, is looking at other people's answers. Because what I found is pretty much any question I ever have, someone has asked before in one way or another.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's happened to me many, many times. And sometimes just into the process of formalizing the question in your mind enough that you can write it as a question. Just writing the question, 3/4 of the way through writing the question out, I'll do the web search again with that wording, and I'll get the answer. It's such a big world, the technology world, and the internet is so useful that it's almost certainly someone else has had this problem.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a great tip too, with the wording of the question, just being able to formalize that question, which can be tricky at times. So yeah, all good stuff there. So, okay, so you mentioned all these different ways and places that people can learn, and everyone's different, and figuring out the right thing or the right method to learn for them. Another thing I want to talk about, though, is just for a person who's more advanced, or maybe has been learning tech skills for a few years, maybe they already have a job as a tech professional. When is the right time to learn a new skill, or should they always be learning new skills? Like, how many things should they be learning at once? Because as we all know, it's like every week or every day, there's something new, there's a new programming language or something new coming out.
Absolutely. One thing I do, and I know a lot of my colleagues at Pluralsight do, is, and not just there, I mean, everywhere, is regularly follow technology news feeds like ZDNet or Ars Technica. If you keep up with those, just spend 15 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, keeping up with those, you know the direction that technology is going. You'll have a little bit of a head start when something new is on the horizon, but also you'll sort of get a perspective on it, that is it likely to be a big thing or not so likely to be a big thing. If you just do that passively day after day, you'll have a feel for what's likely to be important and what's not likely to be important. An example, I've been following these technology news feeds for 20, 25 years now, and every 6 months, pretty much on schedule, there's an article somewhere about, finally, the PC is now dead. The age of the PC is over. It's been happening, I say, every 6 months for 25 years, and I'm still working on a PC. So I don't know. Maybe it will end one day. Maybe the age of the PC is imminent. The end. But in any case, you certainly it's very important to keep a larger picture of the technology world, where what trends there are, where things are going, and along with that, the perspective you get from reading people who do this all the day, the writing of people who work with this stuff all the time. It's good to get multiple perspectives. So that just keeping up your general knowledge is important. In any case, many, many jobs require a strong general knowledge. If you really want to secure an application, you have to be able to think, you have to take into account the way that other people think, the way that hackers might think, the way that your customers might use your product. For that, you need a broader knowledge too. So, in any case, to answer your question specifically, how do you know when to branch out? The answer probably is you should always be at least thinking about it. And as long as you're not jeopardizing your current job and your current goals and your family, then it's probably worthwhile investing time pretty much constantly.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing some of those news feeds and other things people can keep an eye on. So before we wrap up, I also want to, if you have any other recommendations, like for resources or things people can keep an eye on that are trying to break into the tech world.
Well, again, the finding the news feeds that speak to your specific interests is important. So sometimes a particular writer on a platform like ZDNet might be good. There was a writer actually on ZDNet many years ago who introduced me to Linux for the first time. Chris Dawson, his name was. He doesn't write for them anymore. There's also other training platforms like edX, which is a consortium of leading universities that provide course materials free online in MOOCs. They're useful sometimes if that's a sort of field you want to that you want to explore and if at that level. So by all means, you should see if there are any courses and programs on edX that are worthwhile for you. And keep your eyes open because there's always something new that's coming down the line.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, David, for coming on the show. Where can people find you online?
Well, my own website is bootstrap-it.com. And that's got links to my Pluralsight courses and my various books with various publishers and my Medium articles. I have a lot of articles on Medium, which is a fabulous medium, I suppose, for writing and being seen. That's a great place to start. Everything will one way or the other come through bootstrap-it.com.
Perfect. We'll definitely include those links in the show notes. We'll also include links to your books and courses and all that good stuff that you put out into the world. Thank you so much, David, again for coming on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with David Clinton. If you missed any of that or would like a recap, the show notes for this episode can be found at learntocodewith.me/podcast. If you're listening to this episode in the future, simply click the search icon in the upper navigation of the website and type in David's name. As you heard in the interview, David is an instructor for several Pluralsight courses. And it just so happens that I'm a Pluralsight affiliate, which means that if you sign up for Pluralsight using my special link, I'll receive a small commission for referring you. Here's my special link, learntocodewith.me/Pluralsight. And that's all one word, and you spell Pluralsight like Pluralsight. So if you want to sign up for Pluralsight, I'd really appreciate it if you went through that special URL. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next week.